Federal leaders like you know that modernizing IT requires updated technology and a culture shift. Stop reacting to change and start leading transformation. Visit BoozAllen.com/Federal News Radio.
The American aerospace and defense industries make billions each year by selling to foreign governments. And traditionally, the U.S. government considers that a good thing for the economy and because it ensures the gear allies use is interoperable with what U.S. armed forces use. But approving foreign military sales takes a multi-agency process in which a lot of people can say no and no one in charge of getting yes. The Aerospace Industries Association is one of several organizations that has submitted comments in response to a Trump administration initiative to reform arms control policies. Remy Nathan is AIA's Vice President for International Affairs. He discussed the trade group's proposals with Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu.
So it's important to understand that the U.S. government has an interagency review process for all defense exports. And it follows a conventional arms transfer policy to identify the criteria that the review system has to use to consider approving or denying those exports. The president put out something called National Security Presidential Memorandum 10 to, among other things, amplify the importance of also considering the economic benefit of defense exports. And it also called for an action plan to make the process faster in the face of greater demand and greater competition in the global defense market. At the end of the day, the main issue we're trying to address here is that problem of speed.
And so what are the main barriers to speed in the system as it stands now?
The main barriers to speed are the fact that it's a scattered system and where nobody actually owns the overall process. You have individual agencies, individual departments, all of whom have an opinion on a particular sale. No one actually owns the end state of getting to yes. So in that particular type of framework, it's a little hard to get to the right answer in the right time frame. Now, when you add to that the fact that the global defense security environment is increasingly complex and there's greater competition from other countries who are trying to provide weapon systems to countries, it's not enough to just be the best technology at the best price. You also have to be there in the most timely manner possible to meet the customer's needs.
And to the point of no one in charge, the no one in charge problem, the plan or the proposal calls for the creation of a or the designation anyway of a single government agency that would be accountable. How would that accountability process work? Would that organization or official effectively have veto power other elements of the U.S. government who are dragging their feet or have conflicting opinions about a particular decision?
Well, in order to improve the transparency and efficiency challenge that we see in the system, we've actually come up with two recommendations. The first one would actually be the creation of a national security cooperation strategy. The idea there being if you can get the disparate parts of the system to align around a common understanding of what capabilities we want our partners and allies to have, it gives you something to align the process around so that you can get to the right answers as quickly as possible. The other step, as you've identified, is the need for greater accountability. And regardless of the form that takes, whether that's a task force or an agency or what have you, it's less about trying to give someone overall authority over what the right answer is, but more about making sure that you get to the right answer through this process as quickly as possible. After all, the different parts of the system are designed to have different equities in mind. The State Department has to consider foreign policy concerns, and security cooperation and defense trade at the end of the day are, by law, foreign policy matters. But the DOD also has a stake in it because of operational requirements, and commerce also has a role to play in trying to make sure that we maximize the benefits from U.S. defense exports to the U.S. economy.
And to get to another specific, the plan also calls for expediting transactions that, as you guys put it, achieve U.S. security cooperation priorities. How would that prioritization process work?
As it stands right now, the different parts of the system that have input on a given review all have different opinions about what should be prioritized. Parts of DOD and the U.S. military are going to be looking at operational requirements. State Department folks are going to be looking about foreign policy concerns, balance of power, diplomacy issues in various parts of the world. Commerce Department's going to be looking at the bottom line financial issues. what's going on with the U.S. Defense industrial base, our ability to contribute further to the largest manufacturing trade surplus in the U.S., that $86 billion last year. When you have all of these different disparate points of view, they all have their own sense of priority. We're asking them to come together and talk in advance to rack and stack those priorities and make sure that they can come to an agreement about what ultimately we want to maximize, what transactions will achieve those effects, and then make sure that those transactions get through the system as quickly as possible with the right answer.
And beyond just the accountability issues that, we've talked about, the report also identifies problems with inadequate staffing, inadequate bandwidth across the security cooperation enterprise. Can you talk about the, deficiencies that you see there and how to correct them?
Absolutely. Well, certainly one of the reasons why we talk about the importance of prioritization is because there is the bandwidth challenge that you're talking about. Truth be told, for years now, defense trade security cooperation has kind of been more of a second-tier consideration. This administration and its leadership in the White House, at DOD, State, and Commerce should be commended for elevating this issue to the level that it's being given. But certainly when it comes to just the throughput of, the review process, real challenges I would point out at the State Department, for instance, where you know, manpower cuts over there unfortunately are holding up the ability of having enough people to actually process what's increasingly a greater volume and greater complexity of export licenses that need to be approved before any of our companies can ship anything overseas.
And then how about within DOD? I mean, I think senior officials on that side have definitely identified the entire foreign military sales process as in need of improvement. What specific recommendations would you make internal to just that one department to expedite the process?
Well, sure. There's two areas that we will often point to. On the one side, it's contracting. And certainly if you follow the challenges of acquisition and acquisition reform that the government and industry have been wrestling with for years, there's a subset there when you're talking about foreign military sales that oftentimes kind of get, you know, second shrift, if you will. So if you already have a training issue, a bandwidth issue, generally speaking on acquisition, it's even more exacerbated if you're looking at foreign sales. And then the other side I would point to is technology transfer review. You know, that's a system where, you know, it was designed historically to make sure that, you know, you kept the technologies out of the hands of the bad guys. And it's never really been optimized to try to have enough policy, resources, expertise to make sure that we're maximizing getting the technology to the good guys. So certainly, you know, on a manpower and training and expertise basis, for instance, we've asked for that system to start thinking about blue teaming the process, coming up with, you know, the right framework and the right conditions under which we should sell technology, as opposed to a system that's really geared towards saying, no, we don't like that idea, bring me another idea, and then we'll think about it.
And Remy, you flicked at this a little bit, but just to get to why this all matters a little bit, reading between the lines a little bit in the report, I mean, you guys seem to be indicating that things have changed quite a bit in recent years in the marketplace for sales of military goods to foreign governments, and that there are more competitors out there, and they are not faced with the same speed constraints.
Well, that's true. I mean, we're very confident that, you know, the U.S. defense industry is able to provide the best technology at the best price. But the question is, can we provide it to the customer in the right time frame when they need it? It oftentimes the system kind of orients around this idea that countries will wait indefinitely for the U.S. solution and don't actually recognize that at the end of the day in our review process, we're only deciding if they can get American equipment. When the ally and partner have to wait for the completion of our review process, they get frustrated. And when they get frustrated, they begin considering alternative sources of supply. And the truth of the matter is, some of those countries that they may buy from do not have America's best interests at heart. So when we talk about the global defense market, we say that it's a time-sensitive and zero-sum competition with enduring results. So when we lose, a sale or a sales opportunity, we lose for an extended period of time all the foreign policy, national security, and economic benefits that come with it.
Remy Nathan is Vice President for International Affairs at the Aerospace Industries Association.